check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
From New York City, the only city in America, it's the show that invented news. This is The Daily Show with your host, Sarah Silverman.
This is The Daily Show. I'm Sarah Silverman. Let's get right into headlines. Let's begin with Elon Musk, Twitter CEO and man who has definitely scissored a robot. If you thought your Twitter feed was especially flooded with Elon's tweets this week, you weren't alone. Apparently, Elon's tweets weren't going viral enough, so he pressured his engineers to design a special algorithm just for his tweets so that everyone would see them first. Because it behooves all of us to be privy to the fresh and original insights of the richest man in the world. Really, though, this is just the most pathetic thing I've ever heard. I don't understand how someone can have 15 kids and still be an incel. I really do. This man paid $44 billion to get the same insecurities that I have for free. Let's move on to Turkey. It's been 10 days since the country was struck by a devastating earthquake. But in a small bit of good news, rescue workers are still miraculously finding people alive in the rubble. Just yesterday... Yesterday, they saved two brothers who survived more than 200 hours by eating protein powder and drinking their own urine. Ugh, protein powder. But how amazing is that? Protein powder and urine. That definitely sounds like something you could buy from, say, a Joe Rogan. Thank God they had that protein powder down there. That's why experts are now saying, in case of an earthquake, try to stand in the doorway of a GNC. Let's move on. Are you guys familiar with the TV network Newsmax? Oh, you are. It's basically an even more far-right Fox News. Like, if your crazy uncle had a crazy uncle. Anyway, a reporter from Newsmax was at the White House yesterday, and he asked a very Newsmax-y question.
One of the most prominent themes that we hear from both elected Republicans and candidates has to do with what is called wokeism. And so we hear so much talk about woke capitalism, a woke military, and so on. And by way of trying to clarify this for the American people, I wonder if we couldn't begin with a threshold question. To wit, is President Biden woke?
First of all, to wit, okay, Frazier. I love how these guys are always like, the left are coastal elites. Now prithee tell, doth thou be woketh? A person who says to wit is usually a to what? Thinks is Joe Biden woke was like a hard-hitting question. The real hard-hitting question would be, is Joe Biden awake? I don't know. I think we're just communicating wrong because, like, what I know woke to mean is, like, learning new things about people or the world and then acting accordingly, like basic kindness, maybe a gesture of care to people who are more vulnerable. You know what? Actually, you wouldn't like it. It's Jesus stuff. But They're like, yeah, but I want them to push it on me. Nobody's pushing shit on you. You're acting like a beta cuck. Like, woke for the right is really just an umbrella term so that they don't have to say specifically that they're pieces of shit. Like, it feels cooler to say I'm not woke than the truth, which is I'm terrified of what I don't understand and I only know how to process that as anger because I can't look inward, to wit. Whose wokeness nobody is wondering about is Kanye West. His decision to go full Nazi hasn't just destroyed his own career, but it also really burned Adidas. And now the company is looking for a final solution.
After cutting ties with Ye, better known as Kanye West, back in October over anti-Semitic comments, Adidas is now looking into options to salvage its merchandise and avoid major losses. So the company says it does expect to lose more than $1 billion by ending that Yeezy merchandise line. Adidas could possibly repurpose the products now in order to keep their losses at a minimum. Some of the options that they're looking at include removing the Yeezy label on all of the merchandise or selling possibly to smaller markets outside of the United States.
This is why we've got to stop giving shoe deals to celebrities who are cool and start giving them to celebrities who are just fine. Why can't Adidas start a Randy Newman line? What Adidas can do with these sneakers, we turn to Dulce Sloan, live at Adidas headquarters. Dulce, Adidas is screwed, right? Any way to salvage this?
Maybe. I mean, maybe not. You know, that's not my problem. That's Adidas' problem. It's called losing money. You know, you roll the dice and it came up, Mein Kampf. That's on you. Welcome to capitalism, bitches.
Will Adidas have to throw out all these shoes? Like, that's so wasteful. Maybe they just take the labels off?
We're still gonna know it's those shoes. You can't take the label off. You ain't tricking nobody. This isn't a Clark Kent Superman situation. But if you still wanna sell them, you need to find a different use for these shoes. Like, look at these. You don't have to throw them away. You can just drain pasta in them. And you got these boots, okay? They look like weird blankets. You cut them up and you use them as blankets for small hostages, right? And it's like, shh, 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 shh. They can't hurt you. You're safe now. Squeeze the Yeezys around you. And then look at this one. That's a loofah. Easy. Come on. You squeeze your body wash on it like God intended and get the scrubbing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and this one would be a good menorah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Mm-hmm. What else?
Just like God intended. Now, here's another idea. Just keep selling them ugly ass shoes. The only people buying them anymore are Nazis. So then we'll know who the Nazis are.
Ooh.
You identify those motherfuckers with footwear. You see what I'm saying? You'll be able to spot them anywhere, even in the bathroom stall, because y'all know I be in a men's room.
Wait, why are you in a men's room?
Because that's where the men are. It literally says it on the door. Men's rooms. That's where the men's is at.
Look, okay. I mean, I like your plan, but wouldn't it be wrong for Adidas to take Nazi money?
Oh, that's the best part. The more money they spend on the shoes, the less money they got to spend on Nazi shit. Right?
Okay.
And then when it's time to fight, they can't buy weapons because they spent all their money on size 9 pasta strainers.
Aha.
capitalism, you Nazi bitches.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarsella.
Putting bad guys away, there's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarsella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarsella.
We gotta show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden.
Listen to new episodes of The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive bonus content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That need a little more than one take. And for that, we go to Roy Wood Jr. and Desi Leidick for Double Take.
Hey, I'm Roy Wood Jr. and she's Desi Leidick.
Roy. How you doing?
Oh, that's enough small talk. Let's get into it, Desi. Today, we're talking about air travel in America. I don't know about you, Desi, but I love flying because, honestly, there's nothing better than being trapped in a metal tube with 300 strangers during a pandemic and all of us praying that the pilot ain't too drunk to land this bitch. Who doesn't love that?
Well, I'll be honest. I don't actually love that. I gotta tell you, I had the worst flight last weekend. This kid next to me cried the entire time, just screaming in my ear. I was like, I don't care you're my son. Mommy's trying to watch Zoolander.
That's right. You gotta watch Zoolander on that flight.
Zoolander.
It's a classic.
It's a tour de force.
Let's show him our blue steel.
Oh, blue steel?
Blue steel?
Yeah. To do very little for that. I have like resting blue steel face.
Okay.
And it's not just me, Roy. Air travel has gotten so bad recently that Congress has been forced to get involved.
Senators Ed Markey and Richard Blumenthal introduced an airline passengers' bill of rights aimed at requiring airlines to fairly compensate flyers during airline-caused delays and cancellations. The senators also want to limit fees for bags, seating, as well as for changes or cancellations.
If passengers could receive $1,350 whenever their flight is delayed by 4 hours, I am guaranteeing you there'd be a lot fewer delays.
We could soon be getting an airline passenger's Bill of Rights. And if it's anything like the original Bill of Rights, we just have to wait another 100 years for it to apply to women and black people.
Yeah. You know, but that's great to hear. You know, and I gotta say, $1,300 is a lot of money. It's a lot of money, especially if you can buy a $200 flight for a chance to win the grand, people are gonna be gambling at the airport. it. You gonna buy a cheap ticket and wait for the delay? The Sky Lounge gonna look like the off-track betting. Like, come on, Delta, give me that mechanical failure. Ugh.
I'm glad that they're finally doing something about the fees. They've been nickel and diming us for years. Fees for baggage, fees to print a boarding pass. Now there's even fees for picking a seat. Like, what are you going to do if I don't pick a seat? How about I just stand the entire flight? I'll treat your damn airplane like it's a subway and stand there breakdancing and jerking off.
That's true.
I'll do it.
That's true.
I will.
Oh, speaking of jerking off on the airplane.
Go on.
There's been a lot of reports lately of passengers stuck on the runway for hours. And as the laws of physics state, when there's too much time to kill, white people bust out the acoustic guitars.
Take me home, country road.
Let my dive!
Country road, take me home.
No. No, 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 no. Look. No one has ever been like, you know what would make this delayed ass flight better? Let's break out in a sing-along. Also, didn't the dude who wrote that song, didn't he die in a plane crash? How is plane crash dude in charge of the anthem for air travel? How is he in charge of that? And I'm asking you, because you white. How is that possible?
Oh, I don't know, but I'll bring it up at the next white people meeting.
Okay.
But yeah, seeing John Denver on a flight is like tempting fate. Like, I wouldn't watch Titanic on a cruise. I mean, yeah, I'll check out the titty painting scene, but that's it. And one of the big reasons air travel in this country is struggling is the FAA, or more commonly known as FAA.
That's right. FAA is in a lot of trouble right now because we're finding out how outdated some of these airports are. I mean, they're tracking flights with paper strips. They're not using computers. They're writing your flight on a paper strip and putting it up on a board. Arts and crafts!
Oh, God. How are these planes not crashing all the time?
Well, they're getting close.
The FAA is forming a team of experts to examine flight safety after several recent close calls involving commercial planes.
A FedEx Boeing 767 was about to land at Austin's International Airport as a Southwest Airlines 737 was told to take off from the same runway. The two planes came within 100 feet of colliding in thick fog. It comes 3 weeks after another near collision at JFK, where a Delta Airlines flight abruptly stopped its takeoff as an American Airlines flight taxied across the runway in front of it.
Delta 1943, cancel takeoff plans.
A mid-air scare in December just recently came to light. A United Airlines plane departing Maui took a nosedive, plummeting more than 1,400 feet in about 20 seconds, coming within 775 feet of the Pacific Ocean.
Flames shooting out from under the wing of a Delta plane traveling from Scotland to New York, forced to make an emergency landing. Delta blames a mechanical issue.
Yeah. No shit. Now look, I'm not an engineer, Desi. I'm not an engineer. But if the wing is on fire, that looks like a mechanical issue.
Yeah. And also, oh my God, can you imagine dying in a plane crash on the runway? Like, if I'm dying in a plane, I better be in the air. Otherwise, I'm just going all the way through TSA just to die in a car crash.
That's terrible. And to add insult to injury, now you're dead and you don't have your full-size shampoo.
You know what, Roy? These incidents make me think that we need a new passenger bill of rights. Article 1, airlines should not kill you.
Article 2, if they do kill you, you get $1,300.
Article 3, get rid of the paper strips, or at least laminate them. It's the 20th century.
It's the 21st century.
It's the 21st century.
Article 4, if someone on the flight has to die, it should be the person with the acoustic guitar.
And also, let me just slip in Article 5. No more children on flights.
What about your kid?
especially my kids. No more children on flights. Get them off.
Works for me. Thanks for chatting, Desi. Back to you, Sarah.
Himself, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, will be joining me on the show.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarsella.
Putting bad guys away. There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarsella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarsella.
We gotta show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden.
Listen to new episodes of The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive bonus content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight is an NBA legend who will be honored by Adidas with a limited edition sneaker collection called Evolution of Excellence that celebrates his career across sports and social justice. Please welcome, oh my gosh, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Well. You know, when they said I could guest host this show, then they said, "Who's your dream guest? Don't say like it doesn't have to be realistic. Just say one dream guest and then make a realistic list." And I said, "Kareem Abdul-Jabbar." And let's pretend this is like a therapy session. I'm your therapist now.
All right.
Of course, as everyone knows, LeBron James just broke one of your records, and you were so gracious and there and everything, but how did it make you feel?
I have to say, I'm pretty glad that my role in it was finished.
You know?
But LeBron worked real hard for it. He deserves it. He has spent his adult life as a premier athlete and done an exceptional job at it. And his heart is in the right place. I don't know, you may or may not know how he sent a whole school district to college. There's a whole lot he could be doing with that tuition money, you know?
Yeah.
He could be on his own island. But, you know, that's where his heart is. And so I got a lot of respect for him. I wish him well.
Yeah, you were so gracious and with such a very zen absence of ego. And I heard you say on Jimmy Fallon, like, you were like, oh, it's like a burden's been lifted, you know? Like, it's done with that. I'm done with that, you know? And it was just, I thought that was very interesting and and so cool. And you know, it's interesting how great the greats, you know, you're real tall, you're gifted at basketball, but what people don't realize is the work that's put into it, that you were the kid who had the keys to the gym after everyone went home and worked on that skyhook. And, you know, and it really is about getting that 10,000 hours and being dedicated. And I think that's something that kids don't necessarily put together when they see just a star or someone who's the GOAT, you know. It's pretty. I know that's not a question. I also want to point out, by the way, I'm very happy for LeBron, but I will say that your points were scored two at a time, mostly. Little more.
Well, thank you. Hmm. A lot of people don't put that together, but...
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, let me ask you this. I don't even know how to ask it, but my best friend, Tall John, it's an unironic nickname, he's tall. And he's 6'10". And I remember, he's very shy, he's not a performer. And I remember he told me, I know what it's like to be famous because when I walk into a room, people are like, look at that guy, you know, look how tall that guy is. You know, as a eighth grader who is 7 feet tall, I bet you can relate to what it is to be famous in the way of it being very self-conscious, you know, very kind of, and, you know, I remember seeing that, like, you were 14, you were an eighth grader playing with the seniors because you were so tall, and it was one time you cried, and that was what made you put on this game face, this right. kind of stoicism, and in a way that's kind of a survival skill. Do you think that's part of being this kid that was so tall at such a young age?
I think at that time, that's how I coped, you know, because I didn't know how to cope, you know. And I remember I was that age, 14, and I went to Madison Square Garden to see a game, and the guy asked me for my autograph. And I said, you don't know who I am. I know who you are. No, you don't know who I am. And we went back and forth for it. I said, well, I'll get rid of this guy. And I signed my name, and he said, this is some stupid name you thought up. And he boiled it up and he threw it away. And, you know, talk about crushed egos. But, you know, that's how you learn the ropes. You know, you have to take your licks, you know. It's not fun. But, you know, being the person that I am and what I wanted to do in my life, I've been able to do it since I've retired, you know?
I mean, yeah. I'm, you know, I was always a fan of your basketball, but I became moved to super fandom when just reading your writing your pieces and your Substack and your, you know, I think of myself as someone who does odd jobs. I feel very much a kindred spirit with you. You know, you write for Time Magazine, and then you've got your Substack, and then, like, you wrote for Veronica Mars, and then, yeah. You know, like, you get, I mean, it's so cool, you know? You watch The Bachelor, and you write pieces on it you would write for the Hollywood Reporter, and they were so thoughtful, and they weren't just fluff, even the Bachelor stuff, because it is so fascinating to watch these people and to think about what's going on in their minds. And
well, you know, my manager and friend, Deborah Morales, enabled me to figure out a way to express all of this and make it work as a living, you know? Getting paid for doing something that you love is like almost as good as playing basketball and getting paid. You know? So,
you know, there are people, it's such a rare gem of a thing when, you know, like singer-songwriters, like when someone can write beautiful songs and they happen to be great singers, like that's just such a wonderful, happy accident. And with you, with writing, you have all this experience, all these ideas, these you know, progressive thoughts. You're so introspective, and then on top of it, you're this like beautiful writer. You know, like the way you put words together, I find, you know, thrilling.
But you know, Cole Porter was that talented in that he could write songs and write the lyrics for them, and they go together like hand in glove. Very few people like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. You're one of them. That's my point. But I know. I did a lot of these. Whoa, hold on. Not going to do that one yet. Hold on. Listen, I've got little notes for myself. Of course, there's this one.
I got to know Robin Williams.
You did?
Yeah, and you and him have, you share the same talent in that you can get people to laugh when they're hurting. And Robin was exceptional at that. And I'm so sorry he's gone. He was a beautiful man, and I miss him. But you've revived his spirit.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You are much like how Robin with Whoopi and Billy Crystal started... I can't remember what it's called. Comic Relief. You've been very active in activism. You've been an activist for a long time. What was that inciting incident? What got you?
Well, for me, it was the murder of Emmett Till. That bothered me, and I couldn't understand it. I asked my parents to explain it. They didn't have the words. So I've spent my life since then trying to figure out how to get us all to tamp down on the hatred and learn to know and respect and love each other. That's where we got to go. And we got to get there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we all think we're so different and we're the same. You know, I always think, like, we're the same as this mug, this table. We're just molecules. We're not different.
One people, one planet. We got to take care of it and take care of each other.
I mean, yeah, I always think, like, whenever things get too heavy, I'm just like, come on, we're in f***ing outer space.
Yeah.
Like, nothing matters. Hey,
we're going to blow the place up. Wait a minute. Wait, whoa, you know?
I know you've been in a million things, and you've been doing. You're so vital. To me, you're in your most vital, most exciting years. But just going back to, because I watched the documentary Minority of One, which I really loved. I hope you're happy with it.
Thank you, yeah.
I thought it was spectacular. Thank you. I don't know why I said thank you. Thank you. They were clapping for me just because I asked the question so well. But when you did Airplane, it was it was transformational for you because you had always been this kind of game-faced, stoic dude, maybe protecting yourself in some way.
Airplane enabled me to make fun of my image and laugh about it, and it got people, they stopped thinking about that as who I was, and it was right around the time we won a world championship. That helped.
Yeah. But it feels like it unlocked something in you, where you were able to not be how other people define you.
Right. I had like a certain fear of exposing myself at times, you know, just my inner thoughts and emotional feelings, really, I was worried about sharing those, and I've gotten over that. So.
Well, we tend to have shame around our own feelings, and we forget that's all we are, right?
We're just people like everyone else, you know? That's how it works.
I want to put my face in your hand, but I know that's weird.
Well, we can do hands. Let's do hands.
Pretty much the same. You want to start there?
Yeah.
was just going to end this, but I just want to keep going. But I'll end it. But I just want to keep going. But I'll end it. How deep? You know what I really want to ask you about is also your friendship with Bruce Lee. You know, to me that tracks so well, you know?
It should, because when I met Bruce, I wasn't really, you know, a hot shot professional athlete, and he was working as Kato in the Green Hornet. And I just wanted to study Chinese martial arts. And a guy sent me over to him who knew him and said, hey, try and work this with Bruce. And the way he really showed me how powerful his art was when, you know, he had me punch and kick a bag. He'd get behind, put his weight behind it and said, punch and kick it. And I did. He said, that was interesting. And then he had his wife come out and he told me, all right, you put your weight behind the bag. And I did, and she kicked the bag and my body flew off of it. And I gotta learn that.
What is the key to that? Is it about like center of weight or something? Or?
No, it has just learning how to control your inner forces in a way that enable you to deal with someone who might be trying something wrong. You know, if you learn how to move and...
You can just say you don't know.
No, I do. But I do know. It's harder to talk about it than it is to do it, you know? So if you have the time and inclination...
I do.
You know what's really good that you can do on your own? Tai Chi. Great exercise. There you go.
I don't know. I'm just making it up from what I see people do in the park.
No, but you keep doing that for a couple of months, and you'll notice an increase in strength and balance and endurance and stuff.
Yeah, I love Bruce Lee. You know what he reminds me of you with him is just the idea of be like water.
Yeah, to exactly. The name of his movie, yeah.
Yeah, to adjust to any circumstance, to sprout where you're planted, to, you know, when water is in a teacup, it's the shape of a teacup, when water, and, all that stuff.
And Bruce was all about...
well, it's deep.
Brotherhood. Yeah. He was all about brotherhood, you know, and... For a long time, Chinese people didn't like him teaching people who weren't Chinese. But Bruce said, hey, you know, I've learned things from people who weren't Chinese that maybe they might have wanted to keep quiet, but they shared it. And that was his attitude about it, and it made it possible for the exchange to happen. I know that's how it was with me and him. You know, our friendship was based on that, and it meant something.
Yeah, those are mitzvahs. They're generous. It's a wonderful way to live.
A good deed, yes, absolutely.
And that's how I think of you, you know? It's Mr. Rogers and you. You're my top two. It's true. And Gordon, for a chance to win items from the Evolution of Excellence collection, go to the website below and sign up for Club Skyhook. All right, we're going to take a break.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarcella.
Putting bad guys away.
There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarcella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarcella.
We gotta show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross.
And this is The Burden.
Listen to new episodes of The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive bonus content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we go, please consider supporting The Block Chicago, a nonprofit that cultivates the love of boxing in young people while connecting them with mentors and academic services. It's an amazing program. If you can support them in their work, please donate at the link below. Happy birthday, Zvi!
Explore more shows from The Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.